ladies and gentlemen, we're just going to get right into it. It's a beautiful day here in Dallas, Texas. It's gorgeous outside. Sun's shining. We don't have any snow on the ground. I'm very happy about all of this. Hopefully, you know, I like good weather on the weekends. Like during the week, I it could be raining bullets out there. I don't really care what the week looks like. But during the weekend, I want to be able to do stuff with my kids. So I really like this. Hopefully it stays through the whole week. Hopefully it stays all the way to May. Let's be honest. Texas has two seasons, ish and hot as hell. So we have a wonderful guest, and I can't wait to kind of hear some of the things that are going on in his world. Henry, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, William. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right, man.
You were rubbing it in a little bit with the weather there. Seattle, so actually we have to go away to someplace sunny every year about this time.
Yeah, you know, every area has its own bit. You know, like I love Northern California, but it's expensive and they've got like mudslides and all kinds of other stuff. Like every area, the coast of Florida is fantastic. Oh, by the way, there's hurricanes. Like there's no one gets an easy pass. I don't care where you live in the world. You got tornadoes, you got locusts, you know, something's going on. It's never easy. No one gets an easy pass. But do us a favor for those that aren't following you, et cetera. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Henry Albrecht. I'm the CEO and founder of Limeade. And let's see, a little bit about myself. Three delightful kids, a wonderful wife, love sports and reading and building this cool company called Limeade. And that's about where I spend most of my time is family, watching my kids play sports and working on this awesome project that we have going here at work.
I'm actually pulling for your Seahawks. I'm a long-term, lifetime Cowboys fan, and that just means that I can consume a lot of disappointment. That's all that really means. But I'm actually I'm pulling for Pete Carroll. I'm pulling for the Seahawks to come out of the NFC this year. So hopefully, I would love nothing better than Seattle to win a Super Bowl. Like that, just it's been in the league a while, you know. But I would actually love to see that. So I'm actually happy for you. Hopefully, you follow the Seahawks.
No, without turning everything into a sports metaphor, I think there are a lot of pretty cool HR lessons from the way the Seahawks run their business. Super focused on results, but you know, I think if you watch Pete Carroll and the way he coaches and the enthusiasm and engagement he generates, I actually think there's a lot to be learned from that. And I think the team has some awesome talent, but it's not all first-round picks. You know, other than maybe Marshawn Lynch, it's a bunch of third and fifth and seventh rounders that just buy into the whole program. So it's pretty fun to watch, and it's always fun to watch that defensive line sacking quarterbacks too.
Yeah, they've got it on. They've got it in spades, man. They've got it both sides. Hell, technically all three sides of the game really well done. And you know, I hope they don't peak early. Like, you know, I think most sports, whether it's college basketball or just the Olympics, you know, teams that peak at the right time, the ones that eventually win, aren't necessarily always the best. Sometimes they are. My only fear with the Seahawks is that they're really great for three quarters of the season, and then this next part is really the part that matters.
I grew up in Seattle. I've seen the best teams here in Seattle, which are kind of few and far between, but this one's by far the best, and I think they've got a real humility about them too. I think they're grinders and they like to work hard, so it's fun to watch.
Tell us a little bit about Limeade. Well, you know, you mentioned the name of the company, and some are familiar, of course, some aren't. What would you say Limeade does?
Limeade is about building happy, healthy, high-performance workforces. And in fact, the reason we have those three words in there is that those three things are actually really closely related, and we've got some really interesting science and research and practical experience that tells us that it's really hard to separate what we would call well-being from how well you perform at work from how healthy you are. And in fact, we think, you know, sometimes focusing just on health and wellness or just on happiness or well-being at work, or just on job performance in a more mundane kind of performance management point of view, misses the point that really engagement is about all of those things. So that's the mission of the company, is to measurably improve well-being in the world through high-performing workforces, and our focus is helping with health, you know, delivering health and wellness programs to large employers.
Oh, that's genius. Tell us, we're going to ask you both sides of this, of what's keeping you up at night and what you're keeping your clients up at night. But let's start with the first one. You know, you're running the company, and I'm assuming you're having a lot of these, you know, HR and talent, people, human talent related issues, et cetera. What's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Well, we eat our own dog food here, so one of the coolest things about being in the HR space, in the, let's say, employee engagement market, is everything you recommend to your employers, you better be doing yourself. We actually just had a all-company meeting about our values and what we're all about, and we actually reoriented our values. We didn't add a new value about customers, but we changed the order, so it went from number three or number four to number one, which is just delight customers. So if I stress out, if I have a early morning wake up in a cold sweat, it's always about how happy the customer is. And so that's recently become our number one value. It's always been a value to delight customers, but it's number one. So that's the one thing. And it might be some tiny little feature request. It might be something else that we can just do a better job in a client interaction or a business review where we review data, but that's it. If you have happy customers, it's a way more fun place to work every day. So that's where we start.
How do you know when someone's not happy? Like that's, there's some obvious trigger moments there, right? But between them, let's just say that getting fired, no one's going to die here, but getting fired is the worst outcome. Okay. Well, we all know, we've all felt that on some level, and so we know when that happens. But that, there's a spectrum in there that someone can be not as happy, but not quite to the level of firing, et cetera. So how do you keep your finger on the pulse? How do you know if customers, what the range of happiness, et cetera?
Yeah, I think the best measure of happiness is someone who says, I'd love to be a case study for you. I'd love to learn more. How can I use this Limeade thing more than I'm using it today? It's like going into a retail store and you love it so much, you tell all your friends about it and they go shop there the next day. That's really what we want, and that's how we measure it, would be, you know, what's your evangelism score? How many references and case studies are you doing with us? And probably the one qualitative indicator of that for us is when they come and say, I had no idea you could help me with this other challenge I had at work. You know, we hired you to do health and wellness to make sure people were knowing their numbers and engaging in healthy behaviors and activities. I had no idea you could help us more broadly with employee engagement and activation and retention and all the other kind of broader human capital stuff. If we can get beyond our buyer and our user thinking about risk management into a more expansive way of thinking, that's a great thing for us. And so... hope that helped.
Yeah. You know, I used to tell people that I know you're happy when you pay me on time. like if the check's late, you're probably not as happy with me, and I probably need to jump right on that, or you know, it gets worse, right? But you know, for me, especially back in the day, it was just those little thin envelopes that would show up magically and be deposited in accounts. That's how I knew that people loved me and they were thusly happy. Let's talk a little bit about your clients. What's if you were to peer into their heads, what's keeping them up at night? What's top of mind for them?
Wow, that's a great question. I think it's a very chaotic time for the HR and benefits buyer right now. I think there's so in light of all that chaos, I think stability is really important, and proof, I would say, are really important to them. They want programs that work, that minimize disruption, that people actually like, and that show value, that actually prove value. So that's probably the biggest point we get is, this is great. We love this interaction. Everything's been positive. Please help us prove this. Please help us not only not have noise from our employees, but let's not have any noise from our CFOs and CEOs either. Let's really prove the value of what we're doing. I would say that's probably what keeps them up at night, and sometimes that's what costs people in HR their jobs as well. I think just talking more broadly about the mega trends going on in the industry, you've got gamification and social engagement, you've got healthcare reform, Obamacare, or the ACA, whichever you prefer, behavioral economics, and they have all these challenges being thrown at them. But they still have to make a really cohesive employee experience out of, you know, 20 vendor offerings into this market, and that's actually a really hard job. It's really stressful, and there's a lot of pressures coming from all directions.
All right. Yeah, I know you – 'cause see, I've invested in a wellness program, so I'm probably not the person to be really, really hypercritical of this, but I know you're going to have naysayers. And they're probably going to be a little bit more on the accounting and financial side of the business, probably less in HR. But let's deal with the business case. So when you run up against naysayers, because you're a believer, I mean, you started the company, so, you know, of course you're a believer, but you're going to run up against some naysayers, and they're going to say, you know, what's the business case? Is it a nice to have or a need to have? I understand, like, you know, why we should have it, but why is it a must-have, and what's the business case? So let's start off with, you run into a CFO, he, she then says, you know, I don't get it, seems like something they should be doing at home, et cetera. What do you do? How do you confront a typical naysayer?
Well, we're a data-driven and kind of statistically geeky company in a lot of ways. So we actually welcome that type of skepticism. And we, as an industry, owe it to our buyer to show that we're providing value. I do think there's some misplaced desire for statistical proof in wellness that just doesn't exist in other areas of HR. I don't think people hold, you know, Salesforce.com as a CRM or benefits eligibility and enrollment system to the same bars of return on investment that wellness companies get held to, but that doesn't really bother me. I actually think that you should expect that type of return. The way that we approach it is actually looking for them to partner with us to share the data on what outcomes they care about. When we talk to large employers, typically there are three or four key outcomes they want to measure. They want to look at health costs. They want to look at health, which is a different thing entirely. And then they want to look at productivity or job performance, and usually something related to employee well-being, which translates to job, you know, retention and stability. So first thing we do is say, are you willing to share your outcomes data with us so that we can show how this program and the programs we integrate with affect these outcomes? You'd be surprised that a lot of times the people who are extremely demanding of return on investment metrics either aren't able or willing to even share basic outcomes data. So we try to push them pretty hard to share that so that the case can be made in partnership. And we do really well with companies who embrace that sort of data-driven approach. The other thing we do, which may be a little bit different from the rest of the industry, is we look broadly at these outcomes. If they're looking at all those outcomes, and those are all outcomes of an engaged employee, then we ask for all those. For example, health cost. Maybe you can actually have a huge health cost savings by having the right incentive design and accountability built into your benefits. People may or may not even get – whether or not people get healthier, you can still save a company a lot of money and introduce a sense of accountability into benefits independent of people improvement. Then obviously there's measurements related to people's health and productivity and attendance improving. Usually there's an ROI related to replacing duplicate programs. If you have a costly organizational assessment, and Limate actually includes a comprehensive organizational assessment in its approach, sometimes just kind of replacing duplicative programs is helpful. And then CFOs, you mentioned, I think they really value insights into their business. What is the ideal employee? What are the key drivers of employee retention and maybe claims and other kind of business metrics? If you can be the analytics and insights guide for the CFO, then you can actually steer the ship according to that data. So those are some of the approaches we take. I hope that answered your question. If not, I'm ready to go again if I need to.
You know, I love the business case. I mean, there's a couple things in there, because if someone's not willing to share outcomes data, then they're not going to be a good partner. I mean, there's a filter in there that's kind of being kind of being thrown up there, that they're just not going to be a good collaborator. And I love the language around, we're going to build a business case together. It's not our to bring down from the mountaintop without data. It's just a fiction. You know, it's a work of poetry at that point. But if we build this together, there's a basis of this being, you know, in the real, there's a basis of this actually being almost factual, or at least close. I think a lot of business cases are about 80% of its math, and 20% of it is really about the story. Let me ask you about the relationship that you see that wellness, happiness, performance, all of those things together have with morale, values, and engagement. And what I'm really looking for is just your take on why this is so important, and what the hidden relationships between wellness and some of these other things in an organization.
Yeah, well, I was going to kind of pile on to your comment there about partnership, and you know, I think there's a fine line between a vendor and a partner, and I guess it's our job to be thought of as a partner. To your second question, or to your most recent question about, you know, how do values, engagement, and morale tie into this? Actually, wellness is a pretty interesting, you could call it even a Trojan horse to engagement. There have been very few approaches in engaging employees that have had the successes of programs like LIMATE at engaging people. And the reason is a lot of these disease management-based and kind of health risk mitigation-based programs, they're really more akin to kind of safety or security or other tasks that are really more about compliance than engagement. But certain wellness approaches, and I think the LIMATE kind of positive well-being-focused approach gets at this, because they're social by nature, because they focus on positive activities, social connections, you know, getting people engaged in their whole health, their physical, emotional, social, personal, family health, they actually are a lot closer, more closely connected to things like values and morale and engagement than almost any other HR program. In fact, when you come out and explicitly say, hey, we're going to try to build morale, it's actually more challenging. So wellness programs are already anchored right at the middle of this equation. And what we found is that maybe you get better engagement and improvement out of the right type of wellness program than you get out of something that's some whole strategy just about engagement. So it's a really great Trojan horse to solve the engagement problem.
Yeah, what's nice about that is engagement as an outcome is actually pretty tough. And what a lot of people do is they say, well, engagement is great, but really retention is the goal. So I obviously care that employees are truly engaged. I also care about retaining top talent. And, you know, there's definitely a relationship between engagement and keeping one's ability to keep top talent. So I really like the Trojan horse approach. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I want to get your take. You've seen a lot of initiatives, a lot of wellness initiatives. You've seen, you know, things that have kind of come to market. I want to get your take on things that you really like just programs and initiatives that you like. Like I at my former office, we did a 10 pounds in 10 weeks. No, 10% in 10 weeks program, where we incentivize people to lose 10% of their weight in 10 weeks, and it was just kind of a real fun. It was a real fun bit, I would tell you. There were some fails in there, but but it was a lot of fun. and we've done different half marathons and things like that. But what's your What's your take on initiatives that you really, really like, things that are really easy for people to kind of get their heads around, and maybe even some fails, if you can remember any or think of any where you think of things that just didn't go well or didn't go like you thought they would?
Yeah, I think the more top-down and prescriptive the program, I think the more of an epic fail you're going to get. And I could probably tell you some stories of those, but maybe we'll save those for the next show. But where we've seen the most success, I would say, is locally relevant social challenges. Things where there's something even tailored not just to a whole company and their brand, but maybe just to some division within that brand, something very local where people feel like it helps connect them socially with their other coworkers and maybe helps them see their coworkers as human beings as opposed to as, you know, cogs in the big corporate machine they work with. The ways we've seen that work is, first of all, get the branding right, you know, create a challenge that has a goal and get some fun competition engaged, but that feels like it's local and relevant. We also like to see, like we've seen, for example, we have a walk to the moon challenge going on right now at our company where we've got the whole company competing together to try to get enough steps to walk to the moon and back in a certain amount of time. And so we can see our progress as teams. We can see who's winning and losing. We can nudge each other, but we also have a collective goal. So I feel like it's building a social connection in ways maybe that other programs can't do or that feel more forced. We've also seen stuff that I really love is things that go just beyond the health and they actually tie more to the business goal. So, for example, we had a client do a hug a customer challenge where they didn't literally hug the customer, but they were rewarded financially for introducing real customers into the development environment and giving feedback on products. So we like it when you can combine those health and fitness and wellness type of challenges with things that are even more strategic but also have that positive social and fun, kind of fun feedback. We have some companies that do the plank challenges where they're literally dropping down in their workplace and, you know, doing basically a plank, which is like a push-up without the arm movement, for minutes at a time. And, you know, whether clients walk in or not, they're going to stay down and let their abs do some burning. So having some irreverence in the program is really great. So it's not just all about compliance.
Have you seen or do you think there's a place for wellness and volunteerism to kind of collaborate together for a company?
Absolutely. We've seen things like volunteerism and diversity programs and, you know, Habitat for Humanity challenges. The science tells us, you know, we have some pretty cool insights that we'll be sharing about this, but the biggest drivers of productivity in the workforce, the biggest measurable drivers, are actually things like, I believe in the mission of this company. I find meaning at work. I feel socially connected to my colleagues. Those are the things that really drive engagement. And things like volunteerism and caring and giving back, and those are the things you want. I used to give the analogy, you know, who do you want to hire as your next rock star client management person? Is it the person by themselves at the end of the bar, or is it the person, you know, leading the team on the breast cancer walk? And, you know, I won't put the words in the mouths of our listeners, but I'm guessing that some people have an opinion on that one.
Nice. I want to ask you about what's the climate for when wellness doesn't work? Like, there's got to be something, and I don't know what it is, but there's got to be something or some indicators, or it's a recipe. There's got to be something that basically that it's created a little microclimate. Wellness will never work here because of these things. What y'all have found? What is that?
I think it doesn't work if it's a paint job on a broken down car. So if you're willing to work on the engine of your company, if you're willing to, you know, roll up your sleeves and address the real morale, engagement, health, and other issues head on, speak plainly with your people about why you're changing their benefits and why it's strategically important, and maybe say, hey, it's not as pretty as we thought under the hood here, people. We need to actually be transparent about this and address the underlying issues, you're bound to be successful. You know, one of our other values as a company is speak plainly. If you can speak plainly about the human capital issues you have in your workforce respects that. They're going to say, wow, okay, I get it. I see a problem. I like solving problems. That's why I came to work at this company, and I trust this leader. But if you've got someone who's introducing a wellness program, basically, hey, we've got this fun thing and everybody will love it, and underneath you haven't really spoken plainly about the underlying issues, that kind of paint job on a jalopy approach has proven time and time again just not to be successful.
Should we hire for wellness / happiness? Should we push, like, wellness is typically thought of after the hire, we've got a bunch of people, we're doing some stuff, okay, for all the reasons that we've talked about. But should we push things, all, should we push wellness and happiness out into selection, sourcing, talent acquisition, and hiring?
Only if you want to have a really highly aligned, focused, intentional culture. So we know a lot of companies who don't really want an aligned, focused, intentional culture, and we're probably not a great fit for them, quite frankly. But if it's important to use wellness and use tailored branding and communications and challenges and goals and performance metrics, if it's important to align all those in a really positive, focused way, then it really is about everything human-related. It's about attracting the right people. It's about training them properly. It's about having them embrace your values. So I guess that's a long answer, but I can't imagine not taking in human well-being into account if you're trying to build a great company.
Nice. All right, so how are you taking over the world next year? What's the how are you getting all of this out into the market, and what are you doing to kind of take over?
Well, I think having some just laser focus on the customer, like I said before, is the first way. Our best salespeople are happy clients. So that's way number one. The other one is you know, eating our own dog food, drinking our own limeade, if you will, you know, attracting people super passionate about the mission and focused on the goals. That's plan two. Third thing is talking, you know, just continuing to expand our approach with large companies who are intentional about their culture. We have, we also expect to just expand our product offering as we always do. We like to think of ourselves as confident and innovative, so that's probably the best way we'll do it. And we expect another year of 100% growth next year, just like this year.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what. I can't wait to meet you in person. I love the company. I know you've hired some folks that I know, so I'm very, very excited for you. I love the play. I absolutely love not only the play, but how you talk about the play. It aligns with how I see the world as well. The website's just limeade.com, correct?
Yep, L-I-M-E-A-D-E, limeade.com. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say towards the end of this, thank you so much for your time. It's great to talk with you, and like Russell Wilson says, go Hawks.
That sounds good. Twitter handle is also Limeade, folks, so make sure you hit them up on the Twitters. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon. Thanks again for listening to Drive Through HR, and we're going to go out to a little bit of ZZ Top. Thanks,
all
Henry.
Right. Thanks, William.
Drew my friend Ryan. And that takes the time. About to check outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.